This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up later, we'll look at new FDA warnings on many over-the-counter pain relievers.
First, a new release is putting Wisconsin's rich ethnic diversity on the musical map. You might know the name Alan Lomax, the famous field collector of folk music whose work is now enshrined in the Library of Congress. Turns out Lomax, along with fellow field recorders Helene Stratman Thomas and Sidney Robertson, worked in the Upper Midwest, and for the first time ever, the music they recorded here and the people and stories behind them are being released in a new book from UW folklorist James Leary.
Jim Leary joins us in studio now. His book is called Folk Songs of Another America. He's professor of folklore and Scandinavian studies at UW-Madison and director of the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures. Jim, welcome back.
I'm very glad to be here.
Before we dig in, can you give me a sense of just how important, how big a deal these stories and recordings are to the musical history of the Upper Midwest?
Well, the musical history of the region has really not been well known. It's been there, but because it's been in so many languages other than English, people haven't really paid much attention to it. So what I've tried to do with this project is really bring some of this amazing music along with a lot of background about it to the fore, just to kind of place the region in its, what I think is its rightful place within the American folk music mosaic.
Well, right, when we think about Alan Lomax and think about the places that have these deep enshrined musical histories, you think maybe Appalachia, places like that, you don't necessarily think about the Midwest. Should we be thinking about the Midwest like that a little bit more?
Absolutely. Greil Marcus coined this phrase, the old weird America, kind of looking at the Harry Smith collection that Bob Dylan and the Grateful Dead and others drew on. And he was referring mostly to Southern Appalachian and African-American music with a little bit of cowboy songs and Cajun stuff. But there was just a comment in the L.A. Times about this project saying that the strange stuff of lumberjacks and various ethnic groups in the Upper Midwest is every bit as weird. In a good way.
So we've got our own deep story and histories and weirdnesses here in Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
Well, it sounds like your interest in this whole story was piqued a really long time ago when you were a kid, and you were piqued by a lumberjack musician up in northern Wisconsin. What caught your attention there? And just briefly, because I know that's a story in and of itself, but how did that lead to here?
Well, I was very glad, very lucky to grow up in Rice Lake, where an old guy named Otto Rindlisbacher, born in 1895, ran the Friendly Buckhorn Tavern. And against the back wall was the world's largest collection of odd lumber camp musical instruments. And so I, got to go in there every now and then as a special occasion when I was growing up in the 1950s. And later I found out that he made recordings for the Library of Congress. So that kind of got me going.
And this book is a collection of stories, performers, music, and in all kinds of different languages, something like 200 performers collected from the 30s and 40s. Tell us, if you could, the backstory here. How did that music finally get to see the light of day?
Well, there was an emphasis on trying to record American folk songs, especially in the 1930s and into the 40s, for the Archive of American Folk Song at the Library of Congress. And most of it was in the, the East, the West, and the South. But in the 1930s, during the Depression, a young woman named Sidney Robertson was sent here by Charles Seeger of the Resettlement Administration. She was based in Wisconsin. She knew about lumber camp songs and was trying to find them, but along the way she discovered Finns and Serbs and Scots Gaelic singers and French Canadians. So she wrote to Alan Lomax, who she knew, and said, "Someone really needs to come here and do more." He wanted to sweep through all of Michigan, Wisconsin, in Minnesota in 3 months in 1938. He didn't get past the UP except for one day up on the Odena Ojibwe Reservation, where he recorded a great Ojibwe fiddler, Joe Cloud. And so then he wrote to the School of Music at UW-Madison, seeing if anyone would take on the job. And Helene Stratman Thomas, who was a lecturer in music at the time, said, I'll do it. She got a young fellow, Bob Draves, who was a music student but also had training in audio engineering. And they set out. So in the summers of 1940 and 41, and then after World War II, and restrictions were lifted on travel and so forth, gas restrictions, they made a final surge in 1946. And between the three of them, Stratman Thomas, Lomax, and Sidney Robertson, they recorded about 2,000 songs and tunes in about 25 different languages. And because of the language challenges and because of the Upper Midwest being kind of an afterthought, most of this material has not been widely known or circulated.
Well, we can't go any further. We got to hear some as we talk to Jim Leary, author of Folk Songs of Another America. We're going to start off with one that you recommended, sung by Wallace Smith and Edward Webster. Can you tell us a little bit before we listen?
Yeah, these are Oneidas. They're singing in Oneida, but the Oneidas came here from kind of the New York-Ontario border area in the early 19th century, and a lot of them were Christians at the time. So this is sung in a harmony, kind of almost a shape note style singing. Some of them went to the Hampton Institute in Virginia, where African Americans were singing in kind of this style, and it's an incredible performance by these two guys. Right at the end, Jim Page, who's a leading shape note singer in this area, he emailed me last night. He said he thought he heard a woman's voice coming in very faintly. She's off mic, but she's sort of whispering or ghosting in. She couldn't control herself, so it's right at the end.
All right, here's a listen. Singing there from, you said, Oneida Native Americans here in Wisconsin.
That's right.
Remarkable for a bunch of reasons, as you said. What strikes you as you just listen to it?
Well, I love the quality of the voices, the way they soar and resonate and the passion in them. And, it just takes me to another place, I guess.
Yeah, their voices are really strong and solid in that harmony singing. It's incredible. And another you sent us was called Sinai Beach.
Shawnee Bach.
Or Shawnee Bach.
Shawnee Bach. Yeah, it's hard.
This is why I'm going to let you introduce the rest of them.
This is a Welsh song recorded in the context of a Gamafagani or Welsh hymn singing event in Pickett, Wisconsin. And it's a really great leader call and response kind of song.
Yeah. All right, here's that one.
Neither midnight feel away, yes,
hope the dairy done no.
Wore them run a whisper called
life, no gummy at all.
Bell a gas or vein, gal will it.
Chan, oon, chan.
Wore them hallon, me own kai, few it.
Beautiful recording. Quality is excellent, too. I'll have to ask you about that on some of these recordings that we're listening to. They've been remastered, I know, but what's the story behind this one?
Well, this was recorded in a church. I mean, it's a field recording. We had to work from the original discs, transfer them to digital format, and then go through a long process of sound restoration, including with some trying to work out time, because the stuff was not always recorded at exactly the same RPM. But this was recorded pretty well in the first place, but the work that Mike Graves of Osiris Studio did really kind of brought the sound out, and that's been really exciting with this project, that we've not only been able to bring forward the songs but have them translated and have the original language, but also to make them sound really good, especially for old field recordings.
How did the song catchers, as they're sort of called, know where to look for their music? Did they just get a lead and then they tracked it down? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Sidney Robertson knew about a guy named L.G. Sorden, who was a county agent for UW Extension up in Rhinelander. She got contacts from him and then kind of followed their networks. Alan Lomax knew about a bunch of ethnic groups in Wisconsin that were in Michigan, that were in certain communities, and he tried to go there. Stratman Thomas publicized her quest through Wisconsin Public Radio, but also through Madison and Milwaukee newspapers. And then she had students who came from a lot of these communities or acquaintances, and they said, well, go up to Washington Island, they're Icelandic singers, or go down to Darlington, there's an Austrian group, or go to New Glarus, and you could hear a Swiss zither player.
And I understand in the preserving of these that Mills Music Library had something to do with it and the collaboration there. Also, Judy Rose, one of our former and beloved hosts of Simply Folk, did too. What was their contribution?
Absolutely. Way back in the late 60s or early 70s, Dave Peterson of UW Extension knew about these recordings, and he made sure that copies were here. And then Judy, her name was Judy Woodward at the time, produced 13 amazing programs called the Wisconsin Patchwork back in the 1980s based on the Stratman Thomas recordings. I was really lucky to consult on those, and then Dave hired me later to write a little book that went with them, so that got me going. But Judy was very much kind of in the forefront of delving into Helene Stratman Thomas's recordings.
We're talking with Jim Leary right now about the release of new archival recordings from Wisconsin and other places in the upper Midwest from the 30s and 40s. The music was collected by Helene Stratman Thomas, Alan Lomax, and Sidney Robertson. Jim's new book is called Folk Songs of Another America.
And you can call in with your memories, your questions. Do you remember some of these songs? Did you grow up with folk music, singing it, or maybe parents or grandparents singing the old ethnic folk songs to you as you grow up? Did you see this rich ethnic diversity that's been collected in these recordings? If you're a musician trying to keep these traditions alive, call and tell us about that too. Call 800-64 421234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post over at the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking with Jim Leary about the release of new archival recordings from Wisconsin and other places in the upper Midwest from the 30s and 40s. That music collected by Helene Stratman Thomas, Alan Lomax, and Sidney Robertson. Jim Leary's new book is called Folk Songs of Another America.
We'll listen to some more of the songs from the collection, which includes CDs, and you can join in with your memories and your questions. Do you remember hearing folk songs from your ethnic heritage as you grew up? Did you grow up singing these, hearing your parents or grandparents sing them? Did you see this kind of ethnic diversity growing up? Do you perform some of these songs now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Jim, we'll go back to the music now, and one that you like a lot from a Swiss performer. This one's called Landjäger. What do we need to know about that?
Well, this is by Al Miller, originally from New Glarus. In the 1940s, he made an electric zither, and he later made his living in Milwaukee, played at the Golden Zither and Zirkrona. I actually got to meet him in the mid-80s while doing a project, but it's a wonderful, wonderful piece on the zither.
Lovely one there. It's, again, the recording, the quality of it and the precision of the playing is really striking considering that it was recorded, what would you say, the 40s?
Yeah, this was in 1941. This was, I think, maybe the first recording she made was down in New Glarus.
Now, in terms of what the song collectors were after, they were looking for, I know, lumberjack songs, sailor songs. What else was on their list?
Well, particularly in Wisconsin and Michigan, Minnesota, they wanted to capture some of the ethnic and immigrant material, and that really had not been done. Wisconsin, the upper Midwest, was kind of the first place where that kind of diversity was acknowledged. You know, just like nowadays, there are people who thought any kind of cultural and linguistic diversity needed to be suppressed, and especially by public institutions, and it was their job to turn people into so-called homogenized Americans. And there was a recognition by these folklorists that, you know, it takes all stripes to build a country, and it's worth having some kind of pluralism or diversity. So they were interested in those voices, and these songs were not static. There were songs that people were making up about coming to America. One was by some Italians up in Cumberland who sang a song about the experience of immigrating to America, for example.
Would that be America's Most Beautiful?
That is it.
Let's hear that one.
L'America tanto bella, l'Italia piccolina, sono scritta la mia biondina, all'Italia non ci torno più. Sono scritta la mia biondina, all'Italia non ci torno più.
That is America e Tanto Bello from, where did you say that was
This was recorded
again?
In Cumberland. And actually the organizer, Tom St. Angelo, was a longtime member of the Wisconsin Assembly, came from an immigrant family, served in the Republican Party. The library in Cumberland is named for him, and he organized this little group. This was a song that he heard from his mother, and it's about America is so beautiful, Italy is so small. This is a young man writing from this country, and then the woman he's writing to says, "Mother, pack my bag. I'm going to America."
And so it did, that song. Okay, here's a caller we're going to bring in on this. Mary Kay joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mary Kay.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
I come from an Italian family as well. My family are from the northwest part of Italy called Piemonte. And my grandmother used to sing songs to us when we were kids. And I made her sing them enough so I could memorize them. I don't know that they ever had names except for one. But one of them was a lullaby that I sang for my children, and I've sung it for my grandchildren. And they got to the point where when they would hear me start to sing it, they would tell me, "No, Nana," because they didn't want to go to bed. They knew it was time to go to bed. But I don't have a translation for them. I just remember the words is all. I don't even know if you can find them recorded anywhere, to be honest with you.
Right. Yeah, that's an amazing story. You got to keep singing it to them, you know, and hopefully they'll be able to keep singing it to their kids as the song goes along and their lives go along. What does that say to you, stories like that, Jim?
Well, I think that's wonderful, and I think there are a lot of songs like that are out there. There just aren't enough of us folklorists out there, but you know, these songs are worth remembering, and it may be that if you or someone can actually write down the words in Italian, nowadays you can almost Google, type in a whole line into a search engine, and you can find out about the song. There's actually been a lot of work done on Italian-American folk songs and Italian folk songs. There are archives of them. So maybe there's hope in finding out more about the song.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mary Kay. Appreciate that. Jim, do you have a sense of how many of these songs and performers, or at least the legacy of the performers, lives on today, or has a lot of this music disappeared?
You know, I think a lot of it has disappeared. There are some polka traditions, some older fiddling traditions that you find elements of. Music, of course, is always changing. There are so-called 49 songs, powwow drum songs in English. They're still being sung. The Oneidas are still singing hymns. So there are elements of these songs that one can still find, but a lot has changed as well. A lot of these are lost voices.
We're talking to UW folklorist Jim Leary right now about his new book, Folk Songs of Another America, which has folk music recordings from the 30s and 40s, recorded by Alan Lomax and others throughout the Upper Midwest. And do you have a favorite among this collection, something that you got especially close to?
You know, I love them all, but my dad was born in Chippewa Falls, and my grandmother lived, was French-Canadian.
You mean Chippewa Falls?
Chippewa Falls. So we got a little bit about how they sang the Marseillaise. And this is an invocation of a bunch of old-timers in Chippewa Falls.
Okay, we've got a little bit of that recording here, and it begins with an introduction.
Now, folks, I would like to tell you something about in the early 1900s. Oh, I should judge about 1906 or 7. I run across a French-Canadian old lumberjack, and he met me one evening in the old saloon days, and he says, "How do you do? Your name is Cardinal, ain't it?" I says, "Yes, sir, it is." Well, he says, "You know, Mr. Cardinal, I'm used to know your father pretty well. And I know your uncle, too, used to keep the hotel. And say, you know, Mr. Cardinal, I'm like to tell you something. You know how they sing the Marseillaise in Chippewa Falls?" I says, "No, I do not." Well, he says this is the way they sing the Marseillaise in Chipitown Falls. Almost Sarrazin and Felix Cardinal, Johnny Theriot.
How they sang the Marseillaise in Chipitown Falls. Not really called that much anymore, I bet. What do you hear in this one, Jim?
I don't think they call it that anymore either. But that was Charles Cardinal. He was a house painter and quite a character. Judy Rose got to talk to him. He was still living in the 80s. He was in his 90s when she produced her earlier shows.
And, you know, the Midwest, the upper Midwest, particularly known for its Great Lakes, any sailing songs, I don't know if there are any that we have now, but any that really struck you, there must be a strong tradition there.
You know, there are some wonderful sailing songs, especially recorded on Beaver Island in Michigan. And I didn't include those in here because a lot of the English language stuff, or at least some of it, has been released. There was a guy named Ivan Walton who did superb work along with Alan Lomax. And there are two books based on his work and another one called Beaver Island House Party by Laurie Summers that have those songs. So I left him out of this collection, but they're definitely really good ones about shipwrecks and storms and one thing or another, exciting adventures on the Great Lakes.
And as we wrap up, what is your hope about how this collection will go forth into the world and change the way people think about the music and the culture of the Upper Midwest?
Well, I hope people will recognize the cultural pluralism and the richness of the folk music in here. And I also hope that people will, especially in communities, but more broadly, start to sing these songs again and kind of get them back into circulation. And not only can you hear the music, but the words in the original language, English translations, background.